and assuming there's music. It's the pause and then music that I don't know why there's a dramatic pause between when the show goes live and like the music, but you know, let's not worry about that on a Monday. Let's get right into things. Let's talk to Amy about what's going on in the world. First of all, everyone, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you for carving out time to listen to Amy and I wander around for a little while. We absolutely appreciate it. So Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So do us a favor and introduce yourself. Tell the audience a little bit about
you. Oh, a little about me? All right. We'll be brief. That's hard for me. I'm Amy Alla. I am a staffing consultant at a little software company in Redmond, Washington. You might have heard of Microsoft. I've been here for about 2.5 years, and it's actually, don't tell them because I don't think they know, it's the first time I ever did hardcore technical recruiting. I think they thought that I had known how to talk to tech people previously, and I hadn't. I'd been recruiting, you know, CFOs and truck drivers and, you know, all kinds of other random stuff. So, but I've been doing this for a while now and it's going okay.
What have you fallen in love about with recruiting technical talent? What's cool about that? What's hard about that, et cetera?
I think, what's hard about it is probably the lengthier answer. So I'll start with what's cool about it though. Seriously, I love how they get excited about new stuff. I am the least technical person I know, but I still appreciate gadgets and cool stuff and new product launches. And I think that's just fun. And so to talk to an engineer and tell them, hey, you can be a part of this, and this is what's happening next, and this is what's coming. And they kind of light up, you know, because they're constantly learning. And it's a little bit like with my kids, and they're learning a new skill or picking up a new game, and just watching that excitement and to be somehow part of the process that helps connect people to those kinds of opportunities and just watching them get excited about it is really cool. I mean, engineers and technical people, you know, they're not the most social usually. So it's not the kind of person you're going to sit around and have a beer with and talk about real lives. When you start talking about the cool stuff that's happening in tech, they get excited and it feeds my excitement. So I love that part. I think the hardest part, it's just the sheer competition. You know, even a company as big as mine and with, for better or worse, the name brand recognition, we get our asses handed to us all the time competitively. There's some great companies out there with a lot of money that are going after the same people I am. So it's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah, and you're competing not only locally, but you're competing all around the world. You're competing in all kinds of markets. I mean, and obviously in Redmond, there's tons of great firms as well, but you're competing everywhere, right?
Absolutely. And relocation is typically, you know, not really a barrier for us. So I'm trying to pull people out of the Bay, trying to pull people out of New York. So even just getting them to come to Redmond or stay in Redmond, maybe if they're being wooed by companies in other parts of the world, it's a little nuts. And then, I mean, I've recruited people from China. It's global.
Nice. So we have to talk about Amazon. I don't want to bash them. It's kind of an easy. It's so very easy to bash.
That's been done.
Oh boy, that's just lazy content there, right? But you're up there. I mean, this is something. It's not. I mean, you're seeing it even more so than folks in the rest of the parts of the country. What do you see? First of all, how, and you're just your gut take, how true was that article, or how far off was that article?
Right. I got tired. Well, let me tell you my personal experience, and that will hopefully set some framework on why I see it the way I see it. And then I'll talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the candidate perspective and what we're seeing. I interviewed there for a recruiting role at the same time that I was interviewing here at Microsoft. They were both contract roles. They were both, I mean, literally very much an apples to apples comparison. It was more or less the same. Contract or less salary, same opportunity to go full time. I mean, it was literally, you know, what do I pick and eeny, meeny, miny, mo this situation. And I had good girlfriends who worked at each company. And so I'm sitting there with my offers and I'm got my glass of wine and I get on Facebook, probably about, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And I'm trying to decide, I have to make some calls tomorrow and tell people where I'm going to go. And, my girlfriend at Microsoft posted on Facebook about the Surface launch party. This is the first time we did Surface, and she got some cool swag, and there was a party, and there was beer, and there, you know, like had this really awesome day at work. And then someone I know at Amazon had posted something about somebody, thank goodness someone brought her popcorn at her desk because it was 9 o'clock, she was still at work and had missed dinner. And I thought, okay. That made that pretty easy. So I obviously came to Microsoft. And again, that's a single data point. That's one person's experience on one day. But I've not seen a whole lot that doesn't support that. You know what I mean? So I think from a candidate perspective or from an employee perspective, actually, Dwayne Lay, I read the article that he had out this morning on, I think it was Elevated Careers, and he's right. There is, that fits a certain kind of person. And we're seeing here locally, if you have somebody that's between 12 and 18 months, that's kind of the window at which they're either going to fully embrace it and they're going to love it and they're going to thrive in it, or they want out. So it's one of those two things. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it per se. But I think it's a special kind of person that wants that kind of environment, and I'm not that person.
Right, right. How much are you seeing culture? You know, I used to ask people skills and culture. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you'd love to have both. There's always a trade-off. What are you seeing from the folks that you're recruiting? How important is culture?
I think it is because it's such a weird relative term. I can talk about the Microsoft culture and I can speak very high level about all 100,000 employees and what we do and how we think and how we feel, but it's really not accurate because within that larger framework, there's smaller groups and smaller groups and smaller teams, and they have kind of their own internal mini culture. So there is something to be said for fit and for getting along and for having the right kind of balance or vacations or things like that. But I think culture is it's what you make of it. You know, you're going to come in there, and it's certainly if you're coming in as a lead, you're going to kind of help set and define that culture for your own team. So I find that to be a much later conversation and much further down the road, and skill fit and job satisfaction and content of the work is usually much more important.
So when you're recruiting, you find somebody, let's just say you've sourced them, you really kind of have fallen in love with them, you're stalking them, let's just be honest, you're stalking them,
yeah,
finding
I am.
Out all that you can about them. What's your favorite? Are you trying to get them in? Are you trying to ding them out? Like some people, their approach is basically, I've fallen in love with this person. Now let me see what's wrong with them. Let me see how I can make this.
Oh no, work. No, yeah. I'm very positive. I'm very like, come inside, join us. And you know, it's very, but at the same time, not trying to force somebody into a position they don't want or a place they don't fit. But I'm always looking for the reasons why this could work.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's different. And with the folks that you're recruiting, obviously there's a scarcity, right? With this group of people, there's more jobs than there are, capable, women and men to fill them. What's your favorite kind of, interview? I won't say tactic, but even if you think of it as questions, what's your favorite kind of interview bit with candidates?
out of the equation, take the specific job out of the equation. If you could do whatever you wanted as it relates to tech, you're still a software engineer, what would you do? What does that job look like? And you get them to start talking about things that are important to them. Ideally, you're able to take that, point it back to, oh, great, you said this, look what the job has, it has that. And so sometimes you find that it's totally and completely off. And that's the point where you have to say, you know what, I probably don't have what you need. You should talk to my friend who had a startup or whatever. But it's just taking, and I think this is harder as a corporate recruiter and something I wish more corporate recruiters did. Forget about the company you're representing for just a minute. Get away from the very narrow, I've got this role I need to fill, and start looking at the whole person and what do they really need. Sometimes in doing that, I found out that, gosh, you know, this person really fits better with another team. And then it ends up, you know, maybe I send them to another part of the organization or whatever, but then, you know, hey, look who's a team player. So there's a benefit in that as well. But I think it's stepping away from specific, very narrow opening and trying to put someone in it and trying to understand what shape they are, so to speak, and then figuring out which hole fits.
Yeah, I've fallen in love with a startup in London called Workshape.io. And basically what it does is it's working with developers, and it asks them two questions. How do you want to spend your time? What languages do you want to learn? And let them model, okay, just you tell us how you want to. Now, we'll go find the companies that are looking for people that are looking for that. Let's just kind of work it backwards. It's just a genius way to do it. I think you can do it with technical talent, probably harder to do with some other types of talent, but, you know, never know. Never know. Let me ask you about failure.
take us
into some failure. Maybe something recent, maybe your biggest failure, but the audience cares about failure, but they really care about the resolution. Like, what did you learn?
Yeah.
How did you overcome it, et cetera. So give us some failure.
Yeah. You know, I think one that jumps out pretty heavily was a career choice I made a few years ago that was not a good one. I think to understand the logic behind that decision and why I went where I did and did what I did, you know, you have to kind of understand where I came from. And failure has, for me, always kind of been that wolf at the door. You know, it's probably my biggest fear of everything. And I hate clowns, you know, but I'd take on a clown any day over failing at something. And, you know, I think that's, I grew up super poor, and failure in my childhood resulted in homelessness, or resulted in, you know, the water's going to be off for 3 days because we can't afford to pay it, and, you know, things like that. So I was pretty early on very career driven and determined to somehow be successful. I didn't know what I was going to be when I grew up. I didn't know college was an option for me, but not being successful at work with the financial rewards that come with that was just simply not an option, like, to really scary, obsessive perspective. So I got into recruiting, you know, kind of fell into it as we all do on accident, and had done really well, and was kind of driven again by that same need to be number one, need to be the biggest biller, need to be the most successful, you know, the person that my boss would prop up and the person that was kind of looked at as a success story. And in 2009, that was a rough year for a lot of recruiters and really a lot of people. My executive search firm that I was working for closed their Seattle area office. So I'm sitting there with, you know, six fellow recruiters all kind of looking around at each other and, oh crap, now what? You know, we're literally out of work. No one's hiring. How are we going to convince people to pay us to help them hire people? I mean, it was a tough time to be a recruiter. So I went and did the unemployment thing and ended up, kind of long story short, but ended up working for the state of Washington as an employment counselor. So you would think, well, this is an easy segue. This is, you know, I've spent, you know, 10 years helping people get jobs and working on resumes and talking to hiring managers and connecting people to employment. Like, this shouldn't be hard. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, and probably the worst mistake I ever made. not so much in taking the job because it was a necessary evil, but the way I managed it and the way I handled myself in a very, very different culture was pretty horrific. So I was there for 2 years and I came in kind of guns blazing and thought I knew everything and thought I was gonna, you know, change the way the state of Washington handles, you know, this employment business. And I didn't make a lot of friends. It was definitely an eye opener in the sense that I had to really take a step back and figure out how do people view me? You know, I was so used to being successful because I was a big biller or being successful because, you know, I got shit done. And that isn't what success looked like in this type of organization. I did not make a lot of friends, and I probably cried more during that time of my life than any other time before or since.
And is it is some of it as simple as an individual, you control, you know, success, you kind of jump in and move the levers yourself, and now you're thrown into more of a team environment?
Yeah, it was a culture that did not support the, you know, kind of break fast, move quick mentality. It was government agency, you know, and not to be stereotypical, but they move at a scale speed. And there are lots of people who do good, solid work there and who I have maintained a friendship with since leaving in 2011. But, you know, more often than not, I was used to this very kind of out for myself, a little more cutthroat, friendly, competitive, friendly competition, but still competition. And that's not how it works in a government agency. And I did not reflect on that in my own head and figure out how do I fit in and how do I work with these people. I'd always been able to partner with people and to be a good team member. And, you know, again, from a very friendly, competitive kind of way. But in this environment, if I'm trying to do something more or do something faster or do something different, it freaked people out. And so instead of me trying to be influential and trying to find a way to make it appeal to my colleagues, I just tried to bulldoze them. It didn't work.
I'm familiar with this. So some of it is you appreciate people that go fast. You appreciate people that think fast. You appreciate people, and you probably always appreciate people that were just kind of, okay, let's look at it, let's make a decision, let's go. And you were thrown into...
Or let Amy do whatever she wants.
Yes. Or just get out of her way. Just get out of her way.
Yeah, that works.
But then you're thrown into molasses, and they didn't appreciate going fast.
No.
They didn't appreciate anyone going fast. Was any of this gender-related? Did you suffer any of that? Because, you know, I would love to think that we live in a world where men and women don't have different rules, where the rules are the same. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that might get me in a little trouble, but it was my experience. It was an honest experience. To some degree, but I was an outsider. I hadn't worked for the agency for 20 years. I didn't start there straight out of college. I didn't know the system, so to speak. I was female, you know, as you mentioned. I mean, and the office was fairly mixed, but I was kind of this upstart chick who didn't know how to play by the rules and didn't know her place. And to be completely frank, and this is the area that people are probably going to start, you know, freaking out a little bit, it was race related. I worked in an office in a very, very not the safest part of Seattle. I was in the South Side. It was a highly diverse neighborhood and great, wonderful people. But I was literally the lone Caucasian female in my office. And so there was kind of constantly this pushback of, well, she doesn't get it. She doesn't understand. And she didn't grow up like us. And she doesn't know our struggles and the clientele as well as with the people that I worked with. So I was getting it on a lot of fronts. And, you know, what's funny about that, I actually grew up really, really poor on a military base, plenty of diversity in my life and of all kinds. And so I did have I like to think a better understanding than maybe the average Caucasian female. But again, I wasn't judged by what they didn't know about me. They just saw me and, you know, saw my kind of bulldozer attitude, and it was not a great experience, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can see this being a recipe for all kinds of
all kinds of mess. I mean, I was dragged into a back office, you know, more than once, and asked to, you know, kindly find a way to partner better.
Yeah, if you could be a better team leader, well, what is exactly does that mean? Well, you know, take a test that takes 2 hours, and you know, make it last about a week.
Yeah, exactly. What?
No, I'm gonna refuse to learn your slow ways.
Why are you bringing employers into the office to talk to jobs? What are you thinking? We don't do that. Oh, really? Sorry, I thought we were paid by the taxpayers to put people back to work. Crazy me.
Oh, we're trying to get them jobs. What was the audience makeup? The people that you were actually serving and helping. What do these folks look like?
So there were, from it, you know, ethnically, it was all over the place. It's a very heavily, the neighborhood is a lot of East African immigrants. So there was a kind of Eritrea and some of those East African countries. We had a very large population of that. We had a very large population of young moms who were in different government programs for job retraining and, you know, food stamp programs and things like that, where they kind of had to do job search and job training as part of their benefit. So there was a lot of that. We also had a population that was former prisoners. So people, you know, getting out of prison, that now they're on parole and now they've got a job search element as part of their continual treatment or whatever process. And so there was a pretty heavy population of that. So definitely some folks with some employment challenges as well, of all kinds. So whether it was language barriers, whether it was childcare barriers, whether it was criminal record barriers, I mean, there was a lot of things that kind of got in the way. And so I had to really, and what did I learn from that is, I had to really take a step back and say, okay, yeah, I get it. You need a job. That's important. That's important. We got to help you get a job. But you know what? We got to make sure you have a place to live. We got to make sure that your baby's fed. You know, so you get this whole new perspective on what does a job mean to someone. And so for someone like me, who's used to coming in and wheeling and dealing and placing a, you know, executive director for a $30,000 fee or whatever, like, whoa, this is a different kind of conversation. And my typical way of working doesn't work here.
What if any of those audiences was it easier for you to relate to?
You know, obviously the young moms. At being a single mom at, you know, in my previous life as well, I could understand that. I grew up in a family just like these young ladies were growing up in, you know, the single mom on welfare, the lack of opportunity, the, you know, unsafe neighborhood. I mean, that's basically my childhood in a nutshell. So it took me taking down a wall and being able to one-on-one be very honest and say, hey, let me explain to you why I get it. And now let's both kind of work from here and what we can do to get you where you want to go. So definitely that population, you know, I've never been to prison, but you know, I understand barriers. So it became less about, I had your experience, so I feel you and I understand you, and more about, okay, you've got stuff going on that needs to be addressed first. I may not have personally addressed this in my own life, but let's talk about ways that we can address it, or let's get connected to people who can help you or whatever. And so sometimes it was just figuring out, you know, who you need to talk to. You need an appointment with this guy who manages this program. And so understanding the different pieces of the organization and getting them aligned to the right places.
Yeah. It's funny how much we take for granted things like, you know, you have to have a house, or you have to have an address so you can get a driver's license. You have to have a driver's license so you can fill out an application. You got to have clothes in order to go to an interview. Like all of these things that, you know, you and me and pretty much everybody that's listening to this,
totally.
We just take for granted.
Absolutely. And my children now, my older kids going into the working world and starting college and whatnot, like they have no idea these struggles. You know, their biggest problem is, oh man, I got to take the bus. I can't use mom's car today. Like really? But, you know, it's a different world.
That's awesome. How did you know it was time to move on to the next thing?
Yeah. So, you know, one of those pesky employers that I brought in to the office for an employer meet and greet called me up and said, "Hey, I don't really be interested, but you mentioned you used to recruit and we're actually looking for a recruiter." Oh, God, my prayers have been answered. Thank you, Jesus. Look, get me out of here. And so I just kind of started the process. Yeah, definitely. Let me talk to your boss. Let me talk to your, you know, see what's going on. And it was a contract recruiting role for a corporation, which I'd never done before. I'd been agency from day one. Just went through the interview process and she made the offer and I could have cried when I got my offer letter. I mean, I had taken literally my salary base alone, forget all the, you know, extra commissions and whatnot. I was on a draw before I went to the state, but even just that draw, I was at half of what that amount was when I was working for the state. So I was dealing again internally with my own sense of failure and, you know, how am I going to pay rent next month and how, okay, we can stretch out this macaroni for this many nights, you know, things like that. Even during the time when I'm trying to, you know, kind of be the bigger person and help other people less fortunate than me or what have you. I mean, I'm kind of going through my own struggles. And again, that sense of failure that comes with that, right? You know, looking back on my own drama and my own, sorry, mom, crappy upbringing, you know, kind of, oh crap, I'm back here again. So when I got that offer and I sat down with that offer letter, I sat down on my kitchen floor and just burst into tears.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was back where I had been.
I can't help but think that you worked really, really hard in that first gig.
You know? Oh yeah. You want a what? 14 of them? You got it. Have them this week. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of proving that I felt like I needed to do. I'd never worked in corporate before. So there was kind of this, you know, down your nose. Well, you were an agency recruiter. We know what they're like, you know? And so it was a tough thing to develop that.
Yeah. But they appreciate. Yeah. But and you went to government after that. So you were two strikes were against you, but the thing is, the corporate side, what's great about that is they value speed. They value, they value, you know, IQ, they value speed. So the faster you would work, probably the more they respected you.
And the more collaborative, and that was the lesson that I learned from the government. Is I learned, it was a long 2 years that I was there, but I learned I've got to get people on board. I can't force them to like me or get along with me. Because before, you know, you could be a jackass as long as you were billing enough. You know, you get away with a lot when you're a top biller or even top, you know, five in the company or whatever. So that's all well and good. But now when you're no longer graded on that single scale, you better be nice to people and you better figure out a way to be a good partner and to help out your neighbor. And that's what I learned. And even though I look back on my time with the state as a bit of a fail, because it was just not a good place for me personally, I learned so much from that about just how to interact with people. And I think it's made me a better recruiter overall.
Nice. You said something a second ago. Let's move back to, because you said if you're lucky enough to have these folks for that 12 to 18 months, there's some type of critical decision there. That either they double down or they jump. How do you know? I mean, I don't want to just predict, you know, retention, but how do you?
Because it's different for everyone, right? But I got to tell you, you know, heading back towards Amazon territory for just a moment, there was a great article written by one of the engineering managers who rebutted the New York Times article, Nick something or other, I think was his name. And he basically said, "Hey, this isn't the Amazon I know. And this is my experience." He's been at Amazon for 18 months. Mm. Well, there you have it, you know? Yeah. So it's good for him. I think that's awesome. I love that. And I hope if there was some kind of negative press in my organization, I would hope that I have colleagues and engineering managers and team members that would have that same stake in the ground and say, hey, you know what? This isn't really factual for me, and be able to talk about it. So I think that's great. But I think you just asked the question, you know, we're sourcing and stalking and we're kind of, oh, okay, I see here on your profile or your resume or whatever I've gotten my hands on that tells me how long you've been there. How's that going? It's been a year now. Is it what you expected? Anything that surprised you? Anything that you'd like to change? Well, I really hate getting home at midnight every night. Oh, well, let's talk about that. And so that's kind of a clue, you know, like, they may be ripe to make that change.
Right, right. The folks that you're looking at, and obviously that you recruit, do you have a bit around active versus passive candidates, or do you kind of treat everybody the same? What's your bit?
Oh my gosh! So I, you know, this whole active passive thing is, to me, it's almost as ridiculous as the war on talent. It is such a nonsensical statement in my mind, because I look at applicants versus candidates, right? So an applicant, somebody who's actually applied to a role, who has clearly expressed interest in something that we have specifically, that person is actively looking for work. Okay, fine. Passive candidate, by the time you get them on the phone and get them to say yes to even a conversation or a sell call, well, doesn't that make them active? Aren't they now actively engaged in at least answering the phone for your manager? So I don't understand this passive concept or notion that we have around people. I mean, people are going to act in their own best interest. And, you know, once they know there could be something better at Microsoft, for example, well, you know what? Maybe I should call that Google recruiter back too.
Yeah, it's funny as you speak. I've got the exact same bit. I think if you throw enough money at somebody, everyone becomes active.
I love my job, but you know, we all have a price.
You know, it goes back to I don't know if you remember this movie, A Decent Proposal, but everyone has a line. I mean,
they do.
At some point, you're like, hey, I really want you to take this position in Milan. Yeah. I know you're going to have to uproot your family and your kids, and you're going to find a school, but we're going to pay you $900,000. Oh, okay.
Well, twist my arm.
I think,
and then all of a sudden you're able to justify everything else. What a great experience for my kids to you know, witness this new culture. And you can cover a multitude of sins with Benjamins.
Yeah. It's shocking, right? So everyone becomes, it's just finding out at what point is that cost prohibitive for that particular candidate, et cetera. Yeah. So what's your favorite place to fish? Are you a GitHub person? Are you a Stack Overflow person? What's your bit? So now, are you using Dice? Like, what are you using to find these technical, talented people?
This is the part where people are like, really? Is she even a real recruiter? I fish in my own database, first and foremost. We have hundreds of positions at any given time? So my internal CRM, ATS, whatever you want to call it, we have hundreds of positions all over the world. People are applying. People are, you know, having conversations. People are being skipped over a lot of times for no reason other than the recruiter didn't get to them before they made another hire or whatever. So I always start there. And, you know, who did we talk? And I actually try to look for people that we've not talked to in the last year. You know, hey, a year ago, you applied to some role, whatever, but at some point you were interested in Microsoft. Where are you at now? What are your thoughts now? And that tends to work. I don't do a lot with LinkedIn. I just don't have a great response rate with them, so I don't really do a lot. But I do get my hiring managers as well. So I like to fish in their ponds too. Hand them a little bait. Here, send your bait out just like this. Here's an email I wrote for you to send. You guys are on GitHub, Stack Overflow, or, you know, all these places. Why don't you go and find me some names, maybe get some contact info? I'll call them for you. So I get them on board as well and make them recruiters.
And do you, when you say internal, I got the job applicant part of that. Do you also look at internal mobility or internal talent? People already associated with Microsoft?
No, that is managed 100% by the hiring managers themselves. If internal
Got it.
candidates apply, if they want to do an interview, whatever, I'm pretty removed from that process.
Sweet, sweet. What about Glassdoor? What are you, first of all, in the real world, not in the blog, not in the blogger world, but in the real world, what are your candidates telling you about Glassdoor?
It never comes up. Current job, I don't think it's ever, I've been here 2.5 years. I can't remember a single conversation about it. But in my last job before this one, the first corporate gig I had, we were a mess on Glassdoor. I mean, we were just
Right.
ripped apart. And in some cases, with for good reason. There were certainly some areas of the company that were not great, but my groups were pretty okay. And so I would just actually lead with that. You know, I'd get on the phone with a potential candidate. Hey, I'm calling from zones. You know, I'm calling about blah, 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 blah. Hey, you know what? You probably are going to look on Glassdoor as soon as we hang up. Let me tell you a little something about that. And so I would just get it out of the way right away, rip the Band-Aid off. And more often than not, it became a non-issue.
That's very cool. I've got to ask you, we got a 5-ish minutes left. I got to ask you about your writing. So you've done some writing, which is always hard, because
Little
you have a job and then you write and then people see
Yeah.
your writing and then they judge you and you
Yes.
might even get some snarky comments. So, I'm familiar with this. In fact, I think that's how
Yeah.
I became familiar with you is through some of your writing. So what's your bit? What's your bit when you write? And again, you'd like to write more. I mean, I get all that, but
Yeah.
what's your bit when you write?
My bit, like my reason, my hook, my, what do you
All of
mean?
that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Could you
my first ever blog
explain?
ever was on recruiting blogs, and it was right when I was getting ready to start my first corporate gig. And I had been working with a job seeker who'd had a really weird experience with, I'll just say it, with Amazon and with Safeway, you know, very different companies, but for the same kind of job. And so I actually wrote about his experience, and it was just more almost like a journal that just happened to be posted on the internet. And it was kind of me just, let me put my thoughts together and kind of make it make sense. I'm the kind of person that'll take notes during a meeting, will never read the notes again, but the act of writing it helps me absorb it and kind of do something with it, right? So that's what blogging was for me at first. I was just kind of thinking about the kind of recruiter I wanted to be going into corporate. Here's what this guy experienced. Here's what was good. Here's what was bad. It was a way for me to learn myself from that. It just happened to be posted on a public site. And it was really well received. And I thought, huh, maybe I should do this more often. This is kind of cool. You know, just to interact with people and, hey, I love attaboy. So when people are like, wow, I love your stuff, yes, give me more, you know? So there was kind of that element to it. But there was also just this sense of being able to put thoughts on paper, so to speak, and help me make sense of it in my jumbled mind. So it started that way. I continue to churn out posts, and I generally will get pissed off about something. I will fire out a post in 5, 10 minutes max. I'll let it sit for a few minutes. I'll come back and edit out all the bad words, make sure I've got the right punctuation, and I'll post it. I don't put a ton of thought into it. I don't, you know, it's just whatever's pissing me off that week is what I'll write about. Sometimes I have wonderful, happy months, and I have no content for the whole time because I have nothing to bitch about. So this one post I wrote, and the title of the post was The Angry Young Job Seeker. Let me tell you, first of all, he wasn't young. I think he was older than me, but I had this Styx song in my mind the whole time. You know, as I'm talking, every time I would talk to this jerk, the Styx song was playing in my mind. You know, give me a job, give me security, blah, blah, blah. So I titled the post that. And this employment lawyer in Canada loses his shit. I mean, freaks out on me on Twitter. I'm an ageist. I'm all these terrible things. He can't believe that this company is employing me. And, you know, he's now just determined he's going to ruin my life and get me. Now, keep in mind, I'm still kind of new into my newfound well-paid corporate recruiting gig. I mean, I wanted to cry. Like, I've just napalmed my career. So I kind of go slinking into the commerce guys, you know, who managed our social media presence. I kind of slink into his office. I'm like, Britt, I'm so sorry. Please don't fire me. This is what happened. And I feel really bad and I'll do whatever I can to fix it. You know, just tell me what to do. And he's like, what are you even talking about? So I had him pull up Hootsuite and pull up all, you know, and read all that. And he looks over at the social media other person on the team and they look at each other. And I had to wait a good 5 minutes for them to stop laughing at me and explain to me that congratulations, welcome to the internet, you've arrived. And who cares? Yeah. You know, so I've just kind of kept that in mind. You know, I thought this was like a massive fail and I was going to get fired, but who cares? If people like my reading, they get a little something out of it, great. But I write it for me. I write it because I need to get stuff out of my brain. And that's it. That's my bit.
That is a fantastic bit. I write much the same way. I write to codify my thoughts. And if somebody gets something out of it, fantastic. Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah, and then give me a little attaboy because I love those. Pat me on the back, and then we'll all go on about our business.
So tell us about the rest of the year. What do you got planned?
Oh, the rest of the year, I am just... I'm just going to try to get through Christmas, man. I'm getting married. That's kind of cool. Thank you.
Fantastic.
We're just, you know, we just got engaged a week ago, 10 days ago, 9 days, something like that. I don't know. So we're going to Hawaii in October and we're going to get married on the beach. So yeah, that's it. And other than that, this is like mid-year for us. Our fiscal year starts in July 1st. So we're just kind of ramping up our, I don't know. The calendar year doesn't always jive with my work. That's it. Getting through it.
Congratulations. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful time in Hawaii. And obviously, getting married on the beach doesn't suck. So
no, it should be awesome. Thank you very much.
Well, we'll have to have you on after that. Kind of circle back the wagon. Thank you. Thank you, Amy, for carving out time for me and the audience. Absolutely appreciated you coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you. And let's thank the audience for listening to the show. We're going to roll out to a little Sublime. And everyone have a wonderful Monday. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks.